our current position is we've got the evidence, and I can't emphasize that enough. We are blessed, as I say, as acupuncturists compared to other complementary and alternative medicines. We are blessed because we do have sufficient research to argue our case.
Welcome to the AcuTrack podcast. I'm Spod.
And I'm Nick. We're both acupuncture practitioners and researchers.
And he's the clever one.
And Spod's the data guy.
Today on the AcuTrack podcast, we are joined by Ian Appleyard.
And we're really pleased to have him here to talk all about acupuncture research and some of the work that the BACC is doing at the moment. Ian's acupuncture training includes BSc from Westminster University, studying with a private practitioner in Japan, clinical training in Shuguan Hospital and the Meridian Research Institute in Shanghai, and he had a year at the Yangshu Provincial Hospital of TCM in Nanjing. Ian's worked as a private practitioner in Hoven Kendal and was a course director for acupuncture at London South Bank University from 2008 to 2018. His PhD, which was Acupuncture and Moxibustion for Osteoarthritis of the Knee, a Component Analysis Approach, was completed in 2018. And Ian is now the Research and Policy Manager for the British Acupuncture Council, and he has a particular interest in the methodological challenges of research in acupuncture and placebo. So welcome, Ian.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Great to have you, Ian. I thought we'd kick this off, Ian, by just having a general discussion about the acupuncture research landscape at the moment. Where are we at with the evidence base, and what are some of the main challenges for us going forward?
It wasn't really until the early, mid 2010 series, what, 2004, 2005, that we started to get large scale acupuncture clinical trials. So in 2000, if you get a systematic review of acupuncture for back pain, which is obviously a common condition, not just in everyone's clinics, but also for things that get researched. We're normally looking at clinical trials of 40 or 50 people added together, just five or six of these, to make a systematic review. But in 2004, I think the German Federation decided to look at acupuncture. And that's formed a profound foundation of acupuncture research into chronic pain. So they funded large-scale clinical trials into chronic pain, in particular osteoarthritis of the knee, lower back pain, and some shoulder pain. Allergic rhinitis was also in there. Now, this is an enormous amount of money, and I don't think any other countries really spent that much on it. But it does mean that we now have a significant body of evidence with regards to chronic pain. And in 2012, this was all put together in form of a systematic review by what's known as the Acupuncture Trialist Collaboration. And a statistician who heads that up is a man called Andrew Vickers, who's in the States. So they basically got all the numbers, all the figures from these big trials and mashed it all together and did their wonderful statistical analysis, and first published in 2012. And that, in my opinion, is an absolute seminal piece of work, which effectively shows that acupuncture works incontrovertibly. And not only does it work, it's not a placebo. And it's been reinforced because the same review has been updated 2017, early 2018. So with even more clinical trials. So basically, it now has 20,000 individual patient data. So what can we tell from that? The first is, because it's so large, the numbers aren't really going to change. And this is important for us as acupuncturists to understand. The numbers are not going to change. It's always going to say acupuncture compared to the usual treatments, the so-called pragmatic trials, comes in at, you know, point, what's called an effect size of 0.6-ish or whatever. It's just a way to measure a standard way to measure. And the ACT versus the placebo comes in at 0.3. So don't worry too much about what they mean. I guess the important thing to understand is, according to the sort of, let's say, the general accepted scientific practice, above 0.5 is worthwhile. Mm-hmm. 0.2 is not really worthwhile. Now, there's quite a lot that we as acupuncturists can criticize about the Vickers study and the trials that are in there. Now, my view is all our criticisms will tend to point to a certain direction, which is that acupuncture is more effective than the Vickers study shows. And this is another thing that's important. So our future is not really in doing more clinical trials for chronic pain, certainly not using the methodology, so the standard way of understanding how to develop evidence that exists. We have to kind of get in there and start to explain why it doesn't work for acupuncture. But at the same time, we have to acknowledge that this study is extraordinarily useful for us because it's so large, because everything is absolutely battened down. You don't have to know the statistics yourself. No one's asking you to do that. And if anyone criticizes and what you just, I would recommend people say, well, put it in a peer-reviewed journal and let Andrew Vickers and Bland and all the other statisticians that were involved answer. But they don't. They tend to loiter around on skeptic websites saying there's something a bit suspicious about the stats. But no one ever criticizes it in the sort of professional journals, if you like, where they might get laughed at for saying something a bit silly number-wise. So our current position is we've got the evidence, and I can't emphasize that enough. I used to find myself at parties or whatever, social gatherings, and then somebody, as soon as they heard I was an acupuncturist, would saunter up to me and say, I'm a scientist, there is no evidence, blah, blah, blah. And now we've got this study, you can take it out your back pocket and slap it on the desk and say, read it and weep, basically, because the numbers are there. It's not going to change. It does work.
A fantastic summary, Ian, both of the history of the acupuncture research as a field and where we are now. And I'm happy to discuss that Vickers study in depth. Mm. As you say, a study that every acupuncturist really should keep a copy of in their back pocket, especially when they're off to go into parties and people might corner them about the evidence. What you were getting at there, which I think is quite interesting, is that the study is so large, the statistical methods are very robust. That evidence isn't going to change. Acupuncture is well proven now for chronic pain, for at least these chronic pain conditions that were included in that analysis, against a placebo and against a comparative treatment. What you're arguing, though, is that because this review is using mainly this randomized control trial methodology, that doesn't necessarily tell us how effective acupuncture is in the real world. When you're out in the real world, you've hurt your back or you've hurt your neck or your shoulder, and you go and see your local acupuncturist, what kind of results can you expect? So taking from that, you think this is really the way forward, is to sort of say we've got the evidence of efficacy, we're just going to park that over here, and now moving forward, we want to see just how effective acupuncture can be as it's used in the real world by real patients.
Yeah, I think this is true. But the problem with the Vickers study is more foundational. It's what they compare. So for the statistician's point of view, when they get the spreadsheet of the numbers, they just get group A and group B. They don't even know which one's which, because that would be a standard way to blind, make sure the statistician doesn't know who had what treatment. The thing is, when you say group A, so let's say that's the acupuncture, what is the acupuncture? Who carried it out? How many treatments did they have? And how effective was it? And when it says, what was the sham? And this is obviously the big thing that we can get, I think we can get across to non-acupuncturists at the beginning, is the sham is an active treatment. Now, so we basically, the standard procedure is to compare these things as two groups. And there's the assumption that the acupuncture done in trial number one in Portugal is the same as in America, and trial number two, et cetera, which is not really borne out when you actually look at what's going on. There is a way forward, but we have to see things that's much more, and this is where it gets pretty complicated, is that you have, rather than show that acupuncture works, but rather showing that certain elements of acupuncture produce potentially better results. So what we've had so far is, you may have heard of something called the Streitberger needle, which is acts like a theater dagger. So it, the shaft of the needle goes into the handle and it doesn't actually penetrate the skin. So this is one of the sham acupuncture techniques. And it's basically trying to assess whether penetrating the skin produces a better result. And we know from the Vickers, actually a subgroup analysis, that yes, it does. But the mistake is to say that you're comparing acupuncture with sham. All they're actually comparing is insertion with non-insertion. And I think many people who are acupuncturists will know, you can buy needles that don't insert, that there are needles in Yellow Emperor's Classic that are not there for insertion. So it's about how it's framed and what the context is. So what we don't have ever, or I don't think we'll ever have, is just a simple show that acupuncture works. What we can show is that doing things following the traditional theory leads to a better result. And that's the fundamental interpretation I put on the Vickers study. In the wider domain, everyone's calling this acupuncture versus sham, or acupuncture versus non-acupuncture, which normally means non-steroidal anti-inflammatories and maybe physio, the non didn't have acupuncture group. But the I think the genuine way to properly interpret it is to see them as aspects of acupuncture that have been tested. So we shouldn't make an assumption that shallow needling is worse than deep needling. Does that make sense? I mean, there are many practitioners that just use shallow needling. And in the Yellow Emperor's Classic and things you'll talk about, using shallow needling for certain conditions, certain signs and symptoms. So what we have is we need as practitioners, as acupuncturists, to try and bring the scientific community on board. There's quite a lot of complexity that they have to deal with. Mm. And the future, the ultimate game will be not that showing that acupuncture per se works, but elements of acupuncture theory lead to better results.
Hypothetically, Spod and I are going to give you a big bag of cash.
Yeah.
To design your own study for acupuncture. This could be a randomized control trial, a pragmatic study, a more realistic study. What would you like to see in that environment? You've got the money, you've got the resources. What kind of study would you like to see?
Well, no one's ever offered me such a big pile of cash.
Hypothetical.
Yeah. I can hear it jangling now.
Even hypothetically, unfortunately, it does depend a wee bit on just how big this hypothetical package is. If it was like for a single trial, I might look at a kind of close run condition, as in we've got quite good evidence for acupuncture and depression. But it probably needs another couple of good trials
Yes,
to put us into a good a better position to be arguing with the skeptics, if you like. Fundamentally, if you give me the money, I want to think about how we can get acupuncture more widely used in the near term, if you see what I mean, rather than the long term, because I think that helps practitioners. And also there is a snowball effect. And so we're in a better position now in terms of not just public recognition, but also recognition with amongst coalface practitioners, doctors and stuff, who now, I think by and large, are relatively positive about their patients having acupuncture. So in some ways, the reframing of the clinical trial to suit, or to, it's really just to interpret it more reasonably, is quite a long-term thing. It is also more altruistic in some senses, because it's not just acupuncture. There's something fundamentally misleading about the randomized controlled trial. The things that the basic assumptions that are within a randomized controlled trial do jar against traditional Chinese medicine, but they also jar against what most patients feel and recognize, and also lots of other things. So for example, the whole idea is that you have like one particular intervention and things don't work synthetically. So randomized control is all set up just like you have one difference between group A and group B, and then you can compare. Whereas if you, I think most people who are working with acupuncture, you know, and somebody comes for back pain or knee pain or something, you treat them with acupuncture and you may suggest to them that they take more exercise. So part of their long-term recovery is dependent on the exercise. So almost you could see, in a simple term, you could see the acupuncture opens a window for them to exercise, because they're not in so much pain. So they can go for a walk around the park. They can do this, do that. They go for a walk around the park. They feel better. The next day, they're more willing to go for a walk around the park. And then the exercise is also helping to resolve the pain and all of this. And then they sleep better. And so all of these things that synthetically work together are sort of almost the philosophical underpinnings of a randomized controlled trial is against that. They just want to know, what does the acupuncture do? And I think many of us would recognize that depending on the patient, some people really need to exercise. Otherwise, they're just not going to get better. And other people almost go, you need to stop exercising so much. That's why you've got the back pain. So, I mean, we know from sports people like Andy Murray, as I understand, got back pain. You would probably get quite a stern stare if you suggested to him that he exercised more because he's got back pain. But if you have me, for example, who does spend probably too much time on a computer to avoid back pain, the best thing I have to do is exercise. I mean, I can have acupuncture, but also it's very good for me to move around and for a whole host of other reasons. So there's a longer term goal. And I, you know, but if you just give me a couple of million and I'm going to spend it, I would probably choose a condition like depression that I felt another clinical trial would definitely help and it would affect a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that was very well explained with the exercise example, as this is just one additional component to needling that may be involved in going to see your local acupuncturist. In that, even if you take that randomized control trial design a step further and add a acupuncture plus recommended to exercise group versus another group, which is just acupuncture, that who you recommend the exercise advice to is, as you illustrated, on a purely common sense basis, that's quite different. That's hard to randomize. You know, that's hard to randomize any patient into that. And the same would be true of dietary advice or other lifestyle advice, such as stress, work-life balance, management, things like that. And I know the late Hugh McPherson argued that these elements of lifestyle advice that an acupuncturist might give to their patients is often grounded in the fundamental philosophy of the acupuncture treatment and process itself. And that really should be considered as a part of the treatment, is that knowing specifically what kind of lifestyle advice to recommend or not recommend and things like that. And immediately, just by adding that, not even worrying about using different types of points for different types of patients, as well as doing a bit of massage in addition for certain conditions. Yeah. The complexity is vast. It's truly vast. And it's you firstly need an exceptionally large amount of data to really sort of break down the differences there. But even if you do get that big picture data on that individual case-by-case basis, it's still quite difficult to work that out. And then, of course, you've got to work out, well, who's actually following the lifestyle advice as well, and who's doing their homework. So I think that really came across well, that you explained this is the complexity. And for the people listening, practitioners, for patients, for students, for other healthcare practitioners, this is quite a common sense thing to understand. And I think GPs, primary care physicians, are completely aware of that level of complexity as far as healthcare goes as well. This is not something that's unique to acupuncture. Yes, it's a complex intervention, but even just in a drug trial, you know, getting somebody to take their medications in the real world is a more complicated process. You know, quite frankly, there's other things going on. There's lots of other things that certain patients will be doing that other patients won't be doing. So Spod, we're very pro research methods that are trying to look at the big picture and take account of all these things. I think that's the personal way of going forward. I also recognize, Ian, that yes, you have to play the game. Clinical guidelines are going to expand. They are getting more flexible. They are going to look at pragmatic evidence, real world studies from audits and service evaluations and big cohort studies. They are going to increasingly look at that, not just for acupuncture, but for everything, which is great. They should. But the randomized control trial is probably not going anywhere soon. And there still needs to be the effort to conduct good trials, in my view.
Yeah. I mean, it's not to say there's nothing wrong with there's randomized control trials need to be thrown out with the bathwater sort of thing.
Exactly.
Randomization is a really clever thing to do. It is a really clever thing to do and helps you understand what's going on. It's just about understanding what you can interpret from the evidence. And just unfortunately, it did come out of trials for drugs, and it's all designed around that. And acupuncture, as I say, is affected by it, but it's also the case for physical therapies, for talking therapies, which may be more in the mainstream, like a physiotherapist, but your hardcore card-carrying skeptic doesn't think physio works very well either, because they're just so obsessed with placebo.
That's right. That's an interesting development. I think this is positive. The NIH in the USA, as far as I understand, are no longer funding randomized control trials for acupuncture that compare to a placebo group. They are only funding trials that go head to head with a no treatment control or a comparative intervention, such as, you know, a physio or a massage or whatever it might be. I think that's a step in the right direction. That puts acupuncture more on a level playing field in terms of how the research is assessed with things like physio, with things like massage, with things like counseling and talking therapies.
The other thing that we have to remember, I suppose, in terms of, let's say, pure tactics, so if understand ourselves where we're at as an organization, as a profession, is that we're a small organization, and we have to work with others. We can't, it's not about having right. I think we're right, But it's not simply about being right. We have to sort of go step by step. I spoke to somebody who was involved in the German trials. He was one of the key researchers. And I asked him, why did you call these procedures sham? And the answer was, because we wouldn't have had the money. They just wouldn't have had the money if they hadn't called it sham. It was an insistence from the German Federation of what healthcare providers, the insurers who funded it, that there was a placebo control. So they knew full well. And that's why in the early design spaces, they're called minimal acupuncture procedures. So it starts off in the protocol as minimal acupuncture. It gets put into the report on the trial as sham acupuncture. And then by the time it's in a systematic review, it's a placebo. But it's exactly the same thing. So we are blessed, as I say, as acupuncturists compared to other complementary and alternative medicines, we are blessed because we do have sufficient research to argue our case. And I probably bore you to tears by emphasizing this again and again and again, because I'm not sure the BACC membership fully appreciates it. We definitely want to be a bit more, I mean, aggressive is probably not quite the right word, but a bit more proactive and not shy away too much from this. Sort of put our hands up. You know, some people who are involved in acupuncture, Chinese medicine research, kind of throw their hands up in the air and say, we can never do it properly. You know, clinical trials don't reflect what I do, and walk away. I don't think that's going to help us. They're not perfect, but we start to point out why they're not perfect. And the ultimate game, our end game, I suppose, is where do we want acupuncture in the future to be? Where do we want acupuncture? Do you want it in the hospitals? Do you want ordinary people to be able to have acupuncture? And also for people's careers. So, you know, taking a lot of time and study, and just for the wider health benefit. And I think sometimes it's useful for us to see ourselves in a kind of evangelical movement. This is about the health of the nation. And it is not just acupuncture, but acupuncture is part of it. But fundamentally, we're a very unhealthy nation. If you don't mind me saying, present company accepted, of course. But fundamentally, we're not in a healthy space, as in there's a lot of obesity, there's a lot of depression, there's a lot of pain, which doesn't really need to be there if we can adjust things. And this whole conceptualization of how to look after your health is within Chinese medicine. And so, as you're right, Nick, it's not, as Hugh would say, it's not just about the needles. It's about the lifestyle advice. But within that, there's quite a strong, challenging political message, because the lifestyle advice is sometimes, as you will know, is dependent upon what someone can do. I remember treating someone who was severely overweight and trying to encourage them to exercise. But they had to work, and they had to live because they couldn't afford to live that close to the office. So they would spend an hour or plus commuting to get to work, and then an hour plus came back. So that person, out of their, let's say, 16-hour waking day, was losing 3 hours commuting, which had, you know, had they been able to afford somewhere closer, they could have probably got their exercise by walking to work or cycling to work or something. So there's all sorts of these quite profound structural things that we might need to.
And then you have to redesign the acupuncture trial for the people you give exercise advice to, but have less time in the day to do it.
Exactly. So that's the thing, is, you know, saying to the person, oh, you should exercise more, it's kind of, but when? You know, I get up at 6:30, I get in my, you know, breakfast, driving the car, they want me in the office, before 9 o'clock, and they insist on it, and then they work.
We'd just like to say a quick word about our sponsor. The AccuTrack podcast is delighted to be sponsored by Raise Spirit CBD. There has been an increasing amount of research lately supporting the many benefits of CBD oil. Over the years, I've found more and more of my own patients asking if CBD oil can help them. And as a result, I've personally been recommending Raise Spirit CBD products to my patients to help them with a range of issues from pain to sleep problems, etc. I've known the founder of Raise Spirit, also called Nick, for many years now. He is a former professional athlete, Tai Chi practitioner, and a big fan of acupuncture and Chinese medicine. Nick started Raise Spirit back in 2017, which became the UK's first certified organic CBD oil company. There's a lot of passion and integrity behind the Raise Spirit brand. They only ever use 100% organic natural ingredients. They've got a great range of products. I really wouldn't go anywhere else for my CBD oil. AccuTrack listeners, that's you. You can get a 10% discount of all your first-time orders. Just go to www.raisespiritproducts.com and use the code ACCU10. Links to the website and the discount code are included in the episode description.
So, Ian, that's great to understand quite a bit about the sort of complexities of almost good and bad research and how to do it, how not to do it, and kind of the way forward. But just looking at the here and now, maybe the near future. So your work at the BACC, I see, is quite pivotal in helping our industry, all of us practitioners, make more of acupuncture in the big wide world. What can you maybe talk through some of the practical steps that you're putting in place at the BACC at the moment?
Well, I'll start off with a thing that's kind of, I wouldn't say obsessed me, but when I started almost 2 years ago in this role, and the first thing on the in tray, as it were, was came from the Professional Standards Authority. As you may know, British Acupuncture Council is an accredited register. And what they basically were asking us to do was to get our members to be in line with the Advertising Standards Authority's advertising guidelines, which for many acupuncturists out there will know has probably been the bane of their lives for at least a decade.
So these have been quite restrictive and didn't allow you to make any claims, even if they were true. You weren't allowed to, is it right? You weren't allowed to even give testimonials.
Yes. The challenge is that the ASA, Advertising Standards Authority, basically have a sort of a list, which they call the list of conditions that have met their substantiation criteria. Okay. So there's seven of them. And basically, the implication is that acupuncturists are only allowed to advertise these seven conditions. So headache, knee pain, overactive bladder syndrome, for some reason, things like that. They nearly all have a caveat. So they have a rider that says only for short term. So when an acupuncturist tries to write down a leaflet that advertises what they do, they're meant to follow these guidelines. And if they don't, someone can put in a complaint. And potentially there's a sort of tribunal where you put forward the evidence or discuss, or you're told to take it down. Now, I think for some time, as an organization, but all acupuncturists in general, we were perhaps not overwrought, but we wanted, the British Acupuncture Council also wanted to, as an objective, to draw acupuncture more into the mainstream and to be the body that is kind of reliable and out there, and to negotiate with national health and other stakeholders and stuff like that. So there's a natural inclination not to be, find yourself on any naughty step or anything.
In non-confrontational, basically.
Non-confrontational.
Yeah.
But when I looked at the There's the advertising ASA is guidance, which comes through a slightly different body, a sister or partner association called CAP, Committee on Advertising Practice. I think that's what it means. They give out the advice and you can put your leaflet to them. They've got an advice team and they'll basically write back and tell you to use these seven conditions. And if you dare mention anything else, they'll tell you you can't say it, irregardless of what evidence you've got. Because the copy advice team are not given the remit to assess evidence. So they just have to stick to these seven conditions. And the more I thought about it, I mean, you go through a kind of process, or I went through a process. You kind of assume that an august organization like the Advertising Standards Authority is doing things properly. When you dig a bit deeper, they're not doing that very well. Not doing that very well. And it becomes more and more non-scientific, I guess. I mean, their process is someone puts in a complaint about practitioner X, then practitioner X provides the information to the ASA, and the ASA get an expert who sits in a darkened room somewhere and then comes out and pontificates on whether the acupuncturist is right or wrong. Now, this is a whole load of things wrong with that. First of all, it kind of depends on which acupuncturist gets complained about. If they're just a jobbing acupuncturist who doesn't actually even have access to clinical trials, because unless you're affiliated to a institution like a university, you can't download these. So it's a very, very poor way of gathering the evidence, but they apply the results to everyone. And then their expert is not an expert in acupuncture research. They're just kind of rent a scientist, basically, who gets pulled out and doesn't know that much. So there's a lot wrong with it. And it's, by its very nature, it's out of date. So the seven conditions that we can promote, if it were, are based on a complaint put in to the London's, what's it called? I always forget. Basically, the Royal Integrative Hospital in London. So a complaint was put in about their leaflet. And for us as acupuncturists, I suppose, in some ways, it was good because the individuals involved were fairly research, well, they are research savvy, know fairly about it, and they were able to put their case. So we got those seven conditions. But 2013 is a long time ago in research terms, so they are out of date. So this is the first thing, is to understand that our guidance to members is you shouldn't be breaking the Advertising Standard Authority's rules. But strictly speaking, we don't know what the rules are until it's put to the test. So now we've got better evidence for clinical trials, from clinical trials of chronic pain. We could put that forward, but we still don't know what any tribunal from the ASA would actually say. It's a bit like trying to predict any other court of law. You can go to a good lawyer and they say, well, you'll probably win, but it's never a guarantee. So we got that. And then the other issue is within the guidance, the advertising, it's not meant to impinge on free speech. And this, I would say, is the key thing for acupuncturists. It's not meant to impinge on free speech. So if you separate out what you're putting on your websites, also remember, the way things have changed now are very different from when I graduated. As in, we've all got computers and can have websites. And as long as you separate it out, and as long as you're reasonable, as in you talk about the research evidence, you let the reader understand kind of the scale of the evidence. So there's obviously a different one. For those that don't know, there is a difference between a systematic review, which pulls together all the evidence from 15, 20 clinical trials and one clinical trial. You can easily guess, I suppose, that systematic review is better. So you can talk about the evidence, And you can give an emphasis of, okay, so we know this about condition X, like something like rhinitis, allergic rhinitis. So really one very good trial on that, which shows acupuncture works. But it's not the same as having the systematic review we talk about for chronic pain, 20,000 people. So you would bet a lot more money on the pain because we've got so much more research. You bet a fair bit on acupuncture for allergic rhinitis, but you might not for another condition where there's very little research. So allowing the person who's interested in acupuncture to know this is where the evidence is at. Really good clinical trials, quite a good clinical trial. No one's ever researched, and quite a few conditions come under this category. Nobody's ever researched it. No clinical trial. And expert opinion. So in this case, it can be the acupuncturists themselves. Says, no, there's no clinical research, but I treated someone with the same similar complaint and they felt better. Do you see what I mean? You can say that. So then the person can make the decision based on that kind of spectrum. And you need kind of the website pages to get that gradation there to allow people to know. And that, as long as it's clearly kind of demarcated, then that's fine. And I think for the profession, for acupuncturists, is to understand that we've got this capacity now and to get the message out, to let people discuss what the evidence.
And like you're saying, if you go back a couple of decades or maybe a bit further, you know, people would say acupuncture, you know, does it work? How does it work? An acupuncturist would say, it works. Don't know how, don't care. It just does. Do you want to book in? So, yeah. But now we do have the opportunity to say, and here's the evidence.
And crucially, we haven't used the S word yet on this podcast. Acupuncture is safe.
Yeah.
It's a lot safer than most other medical interventions out there. And I think a good way to sort of frame this discussion, it's something I always regularly discuss with my patients. There is a very small chance of anything going wrong and us making your condition worse. There's enough preliminary evidence that this might be worth a shot. And patients are completely happy with that. And just to frame a little bit of what you were saying here, Ian, with the advertising standards, we're having a discussion related to practitioners and sometimes our frustrations in wanting to help people, but being overly restricted in how we can communicate with people where there might be potential benefit. Just for members of the public listening and prospective patients listening, obviously the advertising guidelines, they're there to protect you from misleading claims, usually daft stuff. It might be there for a good reason. It's outdated. It's not done well. The people who are making these guidelines aren't good researchers. And your acupuncturist is generally better informed about the literature. And for the acupuncturists out there, get research literate. It's a fun subject. It's interesting. Your patients will thank you for it. You'll have better conversations with them, with prospective patients. You'll be better able to talk to other healthcare professionals when they ask about the research and just have that open and positive conversation about acupuncture. And one of the reasons you can have a positive conversation on, yeah, let's give it a go, we're not sure, is because it's safe. Now, the access to acupuncture currently in the UK is not that great on the National Health Service. It's not really there. I think there's a few services being offered, but for most people, they would have to go and see a private practitioner. Now, if you asked most practitioners out there, they might have slightly different views about exactly how they would like to see acupuncture integrated into the healthcare service. But the bottom line remains that this is evidence-based medicine, and it should be treated and regarded as a recognized part of the healthcare system. It should be a routine part of healthcare, like other therapies and interventions are. I know the British Acupuncture Council has been doing some work here, particularly off the back of the NICE guidelines for chronic pain, which largely were backed up by that big trialist collaboration paper that you were speaking about. Where are we at in getting some more of these integrated projects started and how are we seeing acupuncture move into conventional healthcare so that more people are aware of it, more people have access to it?
I feel that the mood music is changing. So we've been contacted and we've supported, you know, one primary care network, which is in Gloucester, that's established an acupuncture service for depression and chronic pain. So we help them establish that. It's got British Acupuncture Council members doing the acupuncture. And that's all been great. But the other, what I feel we have to understand is that project came from them. It came out that they were looking, as I think we all know from the news, that there's a shortage of mainstream healthcare professionals. I think it's 150,000 vacancies or something in the NHS, which is an astonishing number. And there's a desire that people should be able to access healthcare services at, let's say, the non-standard hours of 9 to 5 or whatever. So this particular primary care network was thinking through that problem and decided, well, maybe acupuncture could fill. If we can get acupuncturists to be in the evening on the Saturday, because we can't get a GP to do it, we'll get an acupuncturist. So we helped them set that up. And I can just say it's fairly early days, but it's been really well received. And we find this quite a lot when once the service is in and people are seeing how, you know, the doctors and nurses, etc., seeing how effective it can be, that they want more. The challenge, of course, is getting the initial funding and getting in. But having said that, because other primary care networks have been in touch just asking and inquiring in another hospital, there's a sort of feeling that there's a lot more positivity about having acupuncture coming from. People are wondering how it can be brought in, because I do think a lot of the people in charge of the purse strings are a bit panicked by it. And you can see that sometimes within the NICE guidelines and the feedback and the commentary that people come. It's like, don't put in acupuncture, because where can we get all the acupuncturists and where is the service? And key here is the economic evidence. Let's take a very, very simple example. An old person living alone has osteoarthritis of the thumb, at the base of the thumb. You can treat that with acupuncture and they'll be able to open jars and live more independently for longer. So what do you count as a saving? Do you count just the reduction in medication, that they no longer need the pain medication? Do you count they no longer need a little hand splint thing or something? Do you count the fact that they don't need a carer to go in once a day for the rest of their lives to help them get food ready? Do you see what I mean? That's a very simplified example, granted, but that's a challenge, because you get these knock-on benefits. And it's not just acupuncture that's that problem. If you, again, the view, the narrative quite often is the NHS is facing ever-increasing costs. But with more public health and more opportunity for people to look after themselves and to be healthier and to maintain health from an earlier age, why would the costs continue to rise? Do you see what I mean? A lot of illness around is potentially avoidable. I'm not saying acupuncture is going to stop it all, but it can be part of the mix, might even be a small part of the mix.
We had Dr. Jill Ton speaking at the BACC conference just gone, and his interesting study using the Taiwanese health data.
Yes.
That the patients who were going for acupuncture for osteoarthritis, and they were going primarily for pain, had superior cardiac health outcomes many years after they were going for acupuncture treatment.
Yeah.
That's a huge economic cost saving, as well as overall quality of life and happiness, you know, for the patients involved many years down the line, from having acupuncture treatment for another condition. So, you know, all these possible benefits, all these possible economic and health benefits are there, and the data is increasingly showing these to come out, and there's going to be more revelations, I think, to have. But the open mind to acknowledge that broader role, Ian, I think you were saying, of, you know, what part can acupuncture play in the general kind of, you know, public health and healthcare in the UK. It might not be a massive part, but I think it can play a valuable part.
Yeah, I think that's, it's interesting that you say that, because clearly it's not something, you wouldn't find this, you know, cardiovascular benefit from a randomized controlled trial.
Absolutely.
Which typically stop, you know, if they last for a year, that's quite a long, you know, trial, as in taking the outcome measures, finding out whether someone's benefited or not a year after treatment. So it's something that was missed, if you like. I mean, when you, if you were to be not critical, but think about it, you don't know whether, was that the acupuncture, or was it the acupuncture making someone move around more and live their life a bit better and be a bit happier and all the rest of it. So this is the thing, is you get like a web and a network of things going on. So I think one of the good things about the current view within a lot of NHS funding things is they are trying to edge towards, does the patient appreciate this? You see what I mean? They're sort of very much patient-centered. I think they're moving quite slowly, potentially, but they are patient-reported outcome measures, and but also just, did you like it? You know,
Ian, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast and talking to us. This is, I think this feels like a nice natural place to round this up. Do you have any final thoughts?
I hope we can recover a sense of movement, that it is more, is about acupuncture, but it's also about health in general as like a contribution to society. And it's useful to be united in that front. I mean, there's always compromises with the mainstream, as I say. We have to walk with them at slightly slower pace or whatever to guide in our direction. We don't have the power to click our fingers and this is gone. I guess for patients, I mean, for a lot of conditions, even for chronic pain, there's no guarantee. There is no guarantee. We know that acupuncture is very useful for chronic pain, but within those clinical trials, some people didn't get better. Now, that might have been that they didn't actually get very good acupuncture. That's another problem, because it's a skill, and one acupuncturist may be better suited. Acupuncturists may be better suited to you, but I would say it's worth a try. Normally, I mean, there's very few things. It may not be even a remote cure, but might help you deal with the condition or what you're going through. And for some things, it will be like a miraculous cure for you. And I guess the stakeholders, people with the purse strings, have a look at the evidence, take a leap of faith, and hopefully we can improve the health of the wider population. Because I know not everybody can afford it. But there should be savings long term.
Wonderful. Ian, thank you very much.
Thank you both. Yeah, cool.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. We'll be back soon with some new episodes and exciting new guests. So please do subscribe to our podcast to stay in the loop. If you're an acupuncture practitioner and interested in starting on your own research journey, but not quite sure where to start, well, one of the best places to start is in your own clinic. Our goal is to make it as easy as possible for practitioners to actually engage in research and record their patient outcomes. So we've developed a new system to help you do just that. You can find out more by visiting our website at acu-track.org. Until next time, bye for now. I've been Spod.
I've been Nick.
And we've been AccuTrack.